from Tutone to Hire from the RPOA. Whether you're a seasoned talent acquisition professional or just starting in the field, Time to Hire provides an invaluable platform to expand your knowledge, learn from industry leaders, and stay up to date with the rapidly changing world of recruitment. I'm Lamis Aburama. In this episode, I'm delighted to welcome back two guests to the program, Mike Foster, Accounts Director, and Justin King, Director of Solution Design. Mike and Justin are with Advanced RPO, a leading RPO provider and an RPOA Gold member since 2015. We will learn how to analyze talent acquisition programs to create strategic advantages using a pragmatic recruitment scorecard. Welcome, Justin and Mike. How about we start with introductions?
Sounds great. Thanks, Lamis. As Lamis said, I'm Justin King. I'm the Director of Solution Design here at Advanced RPO. Been in the RPO space for about 13 years now, with the last six or so being in solution design, getting to talk with and work with different clients and prospects to understand where they're at currently in their TA program, what issues they have, where they'd like to go, and then figuring out how to get them there. And with me, I have Mike Foster.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So hello, everybody. Again, Mike Foster. I'm an account director with Advanced RPO. I've been in the recruitment industry for a little over 15 years now, of which 11 of them have been in the RPO space in all sorts of roles, from recruitment up into leadership type roles. My role over the last, about 8 years now as an account director is being the main point of contact for our clients, working with them on designing a best-in-class recruitment process, but also managing the recruitment teams that would support them as well. So acting like a talent acquisition advisor slash manager to our clients. So excited to join and ready to get going here, Justin.
All right. So as Lamis had said, today we're going to be looking at a tool that we developed here at Advanced RPO. It's the recruitment scorecard. So we're going to first talk about what is the recruitment scorecard, and then we're going to pull out a few of the pieces that make up the recruitment scorecard and go a little bit deeper in them. If you have questions, feel free to drop them in the chat. We'll have some time for questions at the end. But you can see here the three topics that we're going to cover in a little more detail are assessing your hiring process, configuration of the ATS, and optimizing job posting. So to kick us off, though, let's talk just a little bit about what the recruitment scorecard actually is. So a lot of times within the RPO industry, Mike and I have the opportunity to talk to different individuals from companies of all different shapes and sizes, all of whom want to talk about recruiting. And through this, we've learned a lot about what the typical issues they face. And one of the biggest things that they face is actually analyzing their recruitment program overall. And what we found is part of the reason why this is so difficult to do is because when you look at something like a recruitment program, there's lots of moving parts. So understanding where to start can be one of the hardest things to do. So what we've done is we've broken down the recruitment process, the recruitment program overall, into eight different parts. And then within the recruitment scorecard, which is a self-assessment types tool, it's to guide you through looking at what your current state is, assessing where you're at, and identifying key areas where you can make improvements, and then putting it all together to elevate your TA program overall. So as you can see here, the eight different elements we have are ATS configuration, your job postings, sourcing capabilities, compensation, your branding and employer value prop, your job application design, hiring manager training experience, hiring process, and all of those are important, but we're going to hit three today. As we go through this, if like I said, if you have questions, please let us know, but we're going to hit some of the high points running through it. And I'm going to first pass it over to Mike to talk a little bit about assessing our hiring process.
I appreciate that, Justin. And this scorecard that we've worked on and we've developed is really turned into a good opportunity for our client bases and even ourselves when we're designing and developing these programs as almost a look at yourself in the mirror type of process. It's not a process where it's, anyone gets in trouble by any means or things like that. It's really just trying to identify where are the gaps or where are the improvement areas to make your talent acquisition process as best as it possibly could be. And it's important to be honest with yourself in that. And you know, sometimes that's a little bit of a change management that we're working with clients where, you know, you want to think and believe that the processes are perfect and everything is great. But unless you're honest with yourself and really, you know, interested in digging in and reflecting, you're going to have a tough time identifying these types of processes. So I always, you know, kind of launch this scorecard with, you know, be honest, you know, and be fair to yourself. And, you know, we can work through it and help you design and develop, you know, an efficient process. So usually we like to start on the overall hiring process. All the other pieces kind of fall in line, you know, behind the overarching hiring process that fits within this scorecard. You know, and that first bullet point there, you know, really kind of looks at, you know, do you have a standard process for all your roles across your organization? But most importantly, is it documented? Mm-hmm. One of the number one things I tend to see is people do have a recruitment process, but it's not written down. It's not documented, and it's not somewhere that can be easily accessible. Where this becomes a challenge is a lot of times then it's the recruiter that has the process up in their mind and in their head. You know, this creates all sorts of challenges. One, every recruiter may have something a little bit different kind of documented in their head on what that could be. So from a scalability, from an onboarding perspective, it gets very difficult to take what your current recruitment process is today and really kind of then funnel it out to additional folks and scale it and things like that when it's not purely documented. We always recommend first step, document what it is today, but document it and look at it as a couple different lenses. And when I say that, you know, the recruitment process is you're evaluating it, looking at it really as what is it like for a candidate? What is it like for a manager? What is it like for human resources who may be touching it? And often forgotten, what is it like for the recruiter that's going through that process? And then as much as you can standardize even your current process before you're making it efficient across all your roles, the easier it'll be to really make sure that you have a process built that's going to be compliant, that's going to go through, you know, and be able to be replicated across your organization. When we're going through a evaluation of this process, a lot of the things that we tend to look at in the process are each step in this process, is there a purpose tied to it? Is there a decision? Does it follow compliance? You know, because what we tend to see is there are some recruitment processes that you'll see, and there's steps and areas within it that you start to go, if that's not a decision in the process, then why is it there? If this is causing a bottleneck as your recruiters are going through the process and it's taking a longer time for them to get through this process, let's look at what those bottlenecks are and discuss, are they really needed? You know, and just as an example, some of the things that we typically see, you know, assessments, references, you know, just to call out too, can be great tools on identifying and helping qualify quality talent through a process. Sometimes you look at these and you'll find out that no one's even looking at them. Well, mm-hmm. If no one's looking at them and using during the decision process, then why are they there? So kind of just taking a deeper dive and really looking at, you know, are all the steps in this process yielding you the end goal, which your end goal really should be to provide the most efficient and best candidate experience, hiring manager experience, and recruiter experience. And really going through your process today and evaluating it to know what you have to improve. As we start to go through the hiring process part, the second part of it that Justin's going to get into is just as critical, if not almost at the same area here, which is configuring your ATS to align with your hiring process, which Justin will get to here in a second. But if you have a hiring process that you want to follow, and then you have an applicant tracking system that has a completely separate hiring process, there's going to be a lot of different conflicts. It's not going to be a great experience for everybody who's working in it. And it is really important to make sure that there's alignment there. So Justin, I don't know if you want to spend a little bit of time getting into the ATS, but I did see a question come through.
Mike, maybe we'll take the questions
okay. At the end. Yeah, I was clicking. I couldn't find it. Sorry.
Yeah, thanks for that, Mike. And like you said, you know, the key really is just making sure that your process is actually going to promote what the end goal is, which is getting the best candidates hired as quickly as possible. And I know you mentioned something around like the references. That's one that we don't see as much, but I recently was talking to a client and they were saying that part of their process is to have reference checks at the end. And I asked them, I said, well, how often does that knock someone out or change your hiring decision? And she paused for a second and she said, in the last 2 years, she couldn't remember a single time where it changed anything, but they were taking up to a week to get these completed. And I know that they're losing people at the end of it. Someone else comes in, gives them a better offer. It's just adding more time sometimes. So that's a good example and one that we do see come up quite often. And as we move forward, then, like you talked about, Mike, the ATS configuration. ATS is really the backbone of everything talent acquisition. It is where the rubber meets the road. We can put together all the plans, all the documentation, but we need somewhere to actually conduct the process. And that's where the ATS is. So one of the big things that we look at is this configured to promote what you're actually doing within the business and your process overall? Do you have the steps and statuses that you need to support the hiring process? If you have three different interviews with hiring managers as part of your process, do you have interview process one, two, and three in there so you can actually track people going through? This also promotes compliance as you go through it to make sure that everything is documented, everyone is treated fairly, and they're going through the same process. So anytime that we kick off or implement a new client, this is something that we take a really deep dive and look into is to see how it's set up currently. If you have a different process for exempt and non-exempt, can you actually complete those processes within the ATS? And what we find a lot of times is that the ATS was put in place and configured without the thought of the actual process, or maybe they didn't have a process at that point. Or as they've gone through, they've added different steps and statuses that make it all cluttered. So those are probably the two most common things we see. Either they don't have enough steps and statuses, or they have way too much in there and it creates a lot of confusion. So as we go through that assessment, we're looking at where we can improve it and where we can sometimes have to bring in another tool because a lot of times there's manual tasks being completed outside of the ATS. There's spreadsheets that are being kept to keep track of candidates. And Mike, I'm sure you see this from time to time, where that just adds a lot of confusion. And it also, anytime you're doing something manually, you have a lot more chances for mistakes to happen as we go through it. So that's why it's always important where we can use things and do things within the ATS, we should be. For the most part, most ATSs have the capability of doing a full end-to-end hiring process without any issues. It just comes down to whether or not you set it up in a way to do that. It's also important to look at the capabilities of the ATS and what's included in that. So a lot of times you'll see all the bells and whistles when you go through a demo, but what you actually get might be an abbreviated version based on the version you get. So there's a lot of things to look at the ATS configuration. I have a list of steps and statuses, your dispositioning that we go through. So if anybody's kind of curious about how to elevate, I'd always be happy to talk some more. Mike, I don't know if there's anything that you wanted to add there to this as well.
And as you're looking at the ATS and working with your recruiters, and Justin, you had mentioned the Excel sheet thing that we tend to see quite often. A lot of the Excel sheets stem from a recruiter who doesn't feel comfortable with being able to track a candidate accurately through the system to be able to pull reporting out of that. So then they resort to doing their own Excel sheets. The single-handedly one of the most important things from an ATS, I usually look at is how do we make sure a recruiter in that process doesn't have to leave that system as much as you possibly can. If you can keep them in the system and not having to do all sorts of different reporting, it just gets more consistent. It's all housed in one spot. So if you ever, somebody was to leave your organization, it's not sitting in their inbox or on their computer. It's all within the applicant tracking system. Steps and statuses, I can't echo how important that is. A lot of systems to Justin's point, most applicant tracking systems can handle, a full end-to-end recruitment process. but it's usually up to the business itself to work with the implementation folks when they're buying these systems to set up that process and statuses. And what you tend to see is they may have thought like a new applicant, one interview and offer extended are just the three statuses that you may need, you know, within an ATS. And unfortunately, if you want to pull reporting for subcycles, how long does it take to get from a hiring manager submittal to an interview? You need multiple steps along the way. And you also need those multiple steps so a recruiter can know exactly where their candidate is in the process, as opposed to a bunch of candidates sitting at one status. So I know Justin has a list of those, and you know, that's kind of one of his specialties. So definitely encourage, if anybody has questions or thought, Justin would be your person to speak to for sure.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And when you were talking about the reporting, that is something we do run into a lot, is companies want to be able to understand what's going on, how to improve. And reporting is one of the best ways to analyze what's going on with your process and where you have room for improvement, especially like you said, being able to track subcycles, making sure that there's a timestamp to know how long it takes to get a candidate from application complete through the interview stage, lets you making sure that you have it so that you can tag different hiring managers to a rec or different recruiters to a requisition. So if for some reason we see that one hiring manager consistently has extremely low time to fill, what's different with their recs? What's that recruiter doing? How are we doing that? Or conversely, if we see an issue somewhere, how do we avoid that and dig in to really see? So ATS a lot of time gets glanced over because everybody sees it as just kind of a necessary evil, but there's a lot that can be done to improve your TA program overall just by making sure your ATS is set up. And then I'm going to pass it back over now to you, Mike, on optimizing some job postings.
Yeah, which, you know, not to steal your words, but this is something that often gets overlooked as well in a recruitment process. And part of this is the thought process behind job postings has certainly changed over the last, you know, 5-8 years. But in particular, I think since COVID, it's really kind of put this onto the forefront. But, you know, trying to change the thought process around a job posting isn't just taking a job description that you have and throwing it out on the internet or on monster.com and hoping that it's a results. It's turned into a customer focused play here, which this is a job advertisement. So there's definitely, you have to start thinking of a difference between a job description and a job advertisement. You may have an internal job description, which lists, you know, all sorts of responsibilities, functions, competencies, gets very detailed into what it is. But then you have to look at that and go, okay, how can I optimize this into a job advertisement that's going to get people to want to say, hey, I want to learn more about this job. I want to, you know, click apply. I want to purchase. You know, you're really looking no different than an advertisement to buy some type of product from a store. That's what the consumer is looking for in these postings this day. So some of the things that we typically look at with our clients is that job posting concise and to the point? Again, your internal job description may be extremely detailed, but do you need all that to have a short advertisement on just exactly what this position does and what the qualifications are? Probably don't need, you know, all the things like you tend to see like lines that say, and any other available responsibilities and things like you can remove some of these bullet points that just don't really give the future candidate that much information. So be concise, to the point. The other part of it is again, as a job advertisement, you're selling to that person why they want to work for you. And this starts from the second you post that job, from the second you start branding it out on LinkedIn, different things like that. It's important that you're getting your message out on why you want to work. So we always have, you know, what we call like a job posting optimization template, pretty standard across, you know, as far as the template across most of our clients, but we cater it to each of the clients. But within that, there's usually a section that says, you know, what's in it for you? People in this buyer's market want to know, why should I work here? What's in it for me? You know, and that could be, you know, being transparent and honest around, you know, benefits, you know, PTO, President's Clubs awards, travel, you know, things that you can get. If there's anything in your employee value proposition, which is another part of this scorecard that we won't be getting to today, but as you develop that employee value proposition, getting that out and getting people to understand why they want to work for you and essentially why they want to learn more about this role. But I say that with be honest and transparent in that. Candidates will sniff out if you're putting job advertisements out there and you're not being honest onto what it is. If your benefits, you know, you don't want to fudge what your benefits are or anything like that. You got to be honest, transparent, and that's what people are really looking for. The other piece of it, and something that we tend to see, not many of our clients do, and we do a lot of this in our market research when developing sourcing strategies and things like that, but is when's the last time you looked at your competitors' postings? And when I say that, you may have a competitor sitting right across the street from you, and you look at that posting and you may even yourself go, well, I would rather apply that job than one on my own company. And that could be for various reasons, you know, salaries out there now, you know, it's relatively easy to go on an Indeed or a LinkedIn and just see what your competition's advertising from a pay standpoint. You know, if you're right across the street from somebody and you're advertising $4 less an hour in a manufacturing role, that's exactly the same, going to be very hard to get people to click apply. If your competitors are offering all sorts of different packages and different things like that, like you want to just really take a look at it and say, hey, how am I comparing financially from a value proposition, but also, you know, from a wording perspective, you know, are they following an optimized template? You know, are they looking successful in it? You can learn a lot by just a pretty quick search on Indeed and Monster and LinkedIn and things like that. To see what your competition's doing.
Yeah. And that's Mike, that's a really good call out there with that. And something that if you've never seen something other than your own job description, you're going to think that yours is good. You know, that's the standard. And so taking a step back and looking what's out there will give you a lot of ideas to understand where you should go with it. And then also to make sure that when you look at your competitors, you're looking at your talent competitors. It doesn't necessarily need to be this person you're competing for customers with. It's who you're competing for candidates with. So if you're in the hourly market and you're hiring production workers, you're not just competing with other factories. You're competing with warehouses. You're competing with fast food, retail, a lot of different places. So you need to kind of broaden your spectrum when you consider who your competitors are when it comes to talent. So yeah, that is overall gives you an idea of what the recruitment scorecard looks like. As you can see here, each of the eight sections we have broken out and we have similar probing questions to ask yourself. And something that we didn't say is, you know, there's three answers there, no, somewhat, and yes. Mike alluded to it when he talked through it. You have to be honest. If you go through this and say yes on everything, that means that you are at the pinnacle of recruitment capabilities. You cannot get better. And I've yet to meet anyone, whether it be Fortune 500 or small family startup kind of situation, that can truly say yes to all. So if the yeses on this are the least useful answers that you can get, it's when you say no or somewhat is where you're going to find opportunities for improvement. And when you go through the actual scorecard, we give some tips and tricks on how to get started, some support material, and I'm always happy to chat if someone would like to go through and learn a little bit more. If you're interested in receiving the full recruitment scorecard, feel free to shoot me an email. It's jking@advancedrpo.com, J-K-I-N-G at advancedrpo.com.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Time to Hire podcast from the Recruitment Process Outsourcing Association. Give us a review wherever you listen to the podcast. And always stay connected, stay engaged, and stay informed of what's happening in the talent and recruiting world by tuning into the RPOA, the place to go for RPO.